broadband internet service providers in Real Simple Syndication are proud to bring you
Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night.
Welcome back for another episode of Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night. That is Jordan.
Why, hello there. And that over there is Carlin.
And we're going to be doing Jordan's pick this time.
Yes, this was an interesting pick.
To say the least.
So I had been thinking while we were doing this, we've done a lot of different things. We've done documentaries, we've done foreign movies, we've done action flicks, we've done the big old science fiction classics. But we haven't done any band movies. And I enjoy band movies. I am a musician myself. I have a degree in music. And I also have worked as a DJ and have done like audio projects for friends and everything like that. Nice. And not to toot my own horn, but my friends have said that I have a very good songwriting style and things
nice.
Like that. So I'm like into music. It's my thing. Aside from music, for Dungeons and Dragons and movies. So when you're looking at Netflix, they do have some DVDs of music available, but they don't have a lot. But they did have something from one of my more recent favorite bands. This is a band I got into a couple years ago. So I thought, well, why don't we watch this documentary and see what it's all about? And it's about the band Gogol Bordello. And the DVD, or the DVD, the streaming, it's a movie. It's
film.
Called... Film. It's called Gogol Bordello Nonstop.
This movie sucks. I'm just going to say that much.
What?
This movie's garbage.
No.
For that reason, I asked... We'll get together and we record a few episodes at a time. So I asked Jordan, I was like, can we do the Gogol Bordello documentary last? Because I have an idea for the episode. So we have implemented said idea, and for a few reasons. We are drinking during this episode.
Yeah, we normally don't drink.
We never drink. We usually drink water and tea during our episodes. But for this one, I was like, for two reasons, I want to drink beer during this. Reason one, the movie sucked. So I need to drink some beer to do this review. Reason two, the band itself... The music itself is pretty good, and I think there's some cool things about the band, and they love to get hammered.
They love it.
So I figured this is a good homage to Gogol Bordello by drinking beer while we do the review of their documentary.
You know, if we had really wanted to do them justice, we would have gotten vodka.
Yeah. Like their accordion player seems to like to chug. So this is actually, we talked about it, kind of a meshing of the Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night podcast and the Brutal Battle podcast, which I do, which is a beer podcast.
So why don't you share a little bit about the beer that we're drinking?
All right. We are currently sipping a beer by Clown Shoes Brewing. And Clown Shoes is out of Ipswich, Mass.
Okay.
Actually, Mercury Brewing Company is the actual company behind Clown Shoes.
Okay.
We are drinking a porter. It is a pecan pie porter, which is called Genghis Pecan. Very funny.
Yeah.
And it has a picture of Genghis Khan throwing pecan pies at people. Jordan, if you can see that right there.
And that is one of the reasons why I love craft beers, is because they will just do all sorts of... They've got the moxie to put anything on their labels that they want.
They sure do. And this is a porter that's brewed with roasted pecans.
And it's got a really great... It's got a great... nose to it, because it's got the overall porter notes that you would expect of, you know, kind of a darker smell with a bit of a
malty
and a smell to it. But it also has a bit of a sweet smell to it, which kind of gives it that pie feeling that you're going for.
It doesn't so much taste to me like actual pecans, but the filling with the pecans, that's like the honey kind of flavor that you get, that sweetness.
Right.
So it's kind of good. And actually, I wanted to go ahead and read a little bit about the beer. It says, our new pecan pie porter no longer uses extract, but rather brown sugar and pecans roasted by friends at Q's Nuts in Somerville, Massachusetts. Buddy Hadry, a rep at Bella Vista in Pennsylvania, gave me the name for this beer, the second pecan beer now that he has named. Thank you, Buddy. This is 7% alcohol by volume, so probably about where porters normally are.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe so, a little bit higher, actually.
It actually, I'm really enjoying this, personally, just because I like beer. But also, I think that one of the things that we should recommend with this particular beer is that it would be good to open up the bottle about 20 minutes before you plan to drink it.
Right.
We actually opened this one up and just poured it immediately. But the thing is that it's a little cold. This beer is better drunk a little bit warmer than normal. Yeah.
When beers are cold, they tend to have the flavors and the aromas clam up a little bit. So as it warms up, it'll kind of open up. It's much like wine.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah. So if you want more in-depth beer analysis, please check out Brutal Battle. And why don't you go ahead and give us the URL for that?
It's just brutalbattle.com. And you can also find it on iTunes by just searching Brutal Battle. Mm-hmm. So, no, we will be doing a little drinking during this, enjoying this Genghis Pecan. And now let's talk about the film.
Okay. So Gogo Bordello is pretty much the brainchild of one person, a guy named Eugene Hoots. And Eugene has a really interesting history. He's originally from Romania, and he is one quarter Romani, which is where he gets the gypsy part of the gypsy punk. And essentially, his family came to the United States in the late 80s, early 90s as political refugees. And I believe they originally settled in New England, either New Hampshire or Vermont. And he spent some time up there and then moved to New York City and began to be active within the European community, the Central European community in New York City. Currently, the band is still active. This film was shot between 2001 and 2006. So the band is still active. It seems mostly that the band is whomever Eugene can get to play with him.
Right.
So the modern lineup is not exactly the same people that were in the lineup of the band when this film was actually made.
Right. The interesting thing to me about the band itself is that it really does take on the punk aspect of whatever, whenever.
Yeah.
And that's seen in Eugene's attitude and seen with the way that he picks people for the band. Because in the documentary, they actually talk about he'd just come up to people who he liked their personality and was just like, hey, you want to be in a band? Even if they don't, like, do anything musically, necessarily.
Well, the thing is that it does have the gypsy aspects. And
truly.
We do recognize that gypsy is a pejorative term, but it is the term that the band uses to describe themselves.
Right.
So we're going to go ahead and use it here. So they do have the gypsy aspect in the music style itself. And they do have the punk aspect in Anything Goes Anytime. But they also do have a very strong cabaret aspect to them as well. I think they could probably fall into the dark cabaret subgenre, which is like the bands like Tiger Lilies, Dresden Dolls, things of that nature as well. Also groups that I enjoy. So the things that really make them stand out is they use a lot of traditional instrumentation, violin, whatever it's called,
accordion.
I love
Weird Al's main instrument.
I know. I love the accordion as an instrument, and I can't even remember now. Thank you, Beard.
This is a cool instrument.
Well, you know, the thing is that I used to think that the squeeze box was just for polkas, and then I started listening to like a lot of in addition to like this kind of music, I'm really into like folk rock.
Mm-hmm.
So bands that are really into folk rock like Flogging Molly a group called Enter the Haggis and a big Canadian group is Great Big Sea, and they all to one extent or another use a little bit of accordion in their music. So over time I developed a fondness for the squeeze box that definitely was lacking in my younger days, but you know, it was. And actually, I did a project where I had to create a fake European band, and we actually had an accordion player.
Nice.
Yeah, it was really good. Friends were telling me that we should get out and tour, but we never had the opportunity. Schedules just never matched up. But,
Well, that's when you just grab whoever.
I know. Well,
you, why do you have to schedule anything? Just grab whoever and because, just be like, whoever shows up,
because
we're
I
playing.
Only know one accordion player.
And therein lies the problem.
And our, we were working with an upright bassist, and he moved to New York. And so, I mean, there's... That's one of the things about music is that if you don't live in an area like New York City or Los Angeles or even somewhere like Nashville, there's not a lot of musicians that you know of readily that you can choose from who can play instruments that meet the kind of sound that you want to do.
Right.
So, not to turn this into a completely... musical podcast. Let's go ahead and just talk a little bit about the Netflix summary, who the members of the band are, directors, that kind of thing. Soak up the eclectic sounds of Gogol Bordello, the New York City-based gypsy punk outfit headed by vibrant frontman Eugene Hutz. As filmmaker Margarita Jimeno takes you on stage and behind the scenes with the band from 2001 to 2006. And the film in and of itself was released in 2008. The members of Gogol Bordello that were part of the project were Susan Donaldson, Elliot Ferguson, Thomas Gobena, Eugene Hutz, Ori Kaplan, Yuri Lemeshev, I'll just say it that way, Catherine McGaffigan, and Ram Makayak. So those were some of the primary people who were appearing in the film as parts of the band and everything like that.
Nice. I will say, from the very beginning, this film was released in 2008. Mm-hmm. You said it's covering the span of 2001 to 2006.
Yeah.
It does not seem like that in the film. It seems like a span of 1 year. They do an awful, awful, awful job of kind of letting you know that there's a bunch of time passing.
And they don't explain a lot of... Well, the thing is that the movie is not about the band... so much about it's about Eugene,
right,
and a bunch of other people who pop in occasionally,
and it's about non sequiturs.
Yes,
just because.
Well, I mean, I think that's a lot of the band's performance aspect, though.
Right, and being a punk band, that is a punk thing. But from a film standpoint, watching it, it is extremely frustrating to watch a film that is embodying this punk aspect, because it's just a mess.
Well, and also the thing about punk, the punk aspect, in a lot of ways, there are different kinds of punk. Steampunk, for example, is a little bit more Victorian, but for a lot of the punk aesthetic, there is a DIY low budget aspect
correct.
To it. So, you know, the music is supposed to be unpolished. The sound is supposed to be a little bit raw, and the people in and of themselves live in a very raw lifestyle. And I don't mean raw as in foodie, but as in...
Yeah, but the thing is, if you want to make a film that will accurately portray a band such as this and do them justice,
mm-hmm.
you shouldn't do it in this punk style, because... in my opinion, you're just not making a film that people want to watch. I'm going to be honest. I was just sitting there. This is only like an hour and a half film.
It's not long.
I was sitting there waiting for it to be over. I was just like, when is this going to end? Because it seemed to me like it was like 3 hours. It was horrendously torturous to watch this film.
I think part of it was that, you know, the band is rather large. And so they're having to introduce a whole bunch of people right off the bat.
But when they're introducing people, they're not even necessarily doing it in a meaningful manner.
They're not. Well, the thing is that they're intercutting between band footage and then Eugene talking about his life in the Soviet Union and then introducing band people. So the story is not told in a chronological manner
right.
whatsoever. And also, there's filming musicians in music is a very difficult thing to do, because a lot of times... what you should do is you should have like your film, your camera doing the work, but you should also have like a piggyback off of the mixing so you can get a good clean sound, or you can get the musical stems that you can mix down later on in post. But this film did not seem to be filmed with the kind of budget that would allow that.
Well, I mean, but we've seen things filmed before for very low budgets that
Work
look good and they were put together well. I mean, case in point, we reviewed Primer, $7,000. Yeah, and that was really well done.
Yes.
And it just seemed to me like there was just someone who's like, I have a camera. I'm going to make a film. And they know nothing about doing it. They don't even know anything about camera work.
Right.
They don't even know how to frame a shot.
There's like, a lot of zooming nothing. And a lot of shots that seem like really random. And also, one of the things that it did that was really kind of unique was that it showed the band members in a light that was less than positive in a lot of ways.
Yeah, true.
Because several of the members of the band, especially the accordion player and the fiddler, they like to get hammered. Well, there's no way around it. The band enjoys getting hammered. And then they all get hammered, and they leave the drummer, essentially, to do all of the major work, like all of the cleanup, the tear down, the put up, getting the microphones and the cables assembled, packing the van, driving, everything like that, while the rest of the band plays games and gets drunk.
Well, and I believe you told me before we started recording that this drummer's not with the band anymore.
He's not, no.
And you had also said when we were talking before recording that he seemed very pissed off.
And throughout the entire movie, he just seems like he's really angry about the
situation. Well, I would be
too
with what they show. Like, he even said, like, I'm not really the drummer, I'm the roadie.
Right.
Because he was the one who had to do everything, pretty much.
Right.
And that's not fair, that's not cool. But I guess that's part of the problem with being with a truly punk band.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is that I've been involved in live music ever since I was a teenager. And both as a performer and as a musician and as also an audio engineer, because I do a lot of audio mixing for friends and church functions and things like that. So, you know, to see... The common thing for me to see is the musicians roll in, they each have their own gear, they take care of their own gear, and then the show begins. Or if, like on some of the professional rigs that I've worked on, the band rolls in, the roadies make sure everything is set up, and then the band goes about the aspects of sound checks and everything while the roadies make sure all the fine details are taken care of. So, you know, there are these professional methods of doing this. It just seemed like this one dude was making all the business phone calls, making sure that they had places to stay and everything like that, and then the rest of the group were just doing whatever they wanted to.
Yeah, it's free for all.
Mm-hmm.
From the beginning of the film, I didn't know what to think because it's showing the credits in the beginning were very like 70s, 80s style credits.
Yeah.
So I was just like, when was this film done? And then I looked, I was like, 2008. Wow, those look really like outdated. But then I was like, okay, well that's fine. That's just the aesthetic they're going for, whatever. A lot of the audio and video are super rough in this.
Yeah.
Including some of the video looks like it's done on, like, old school camera phone. So it's, like, got tons of lag in it, and it's just... In my opinion, you do not use that. Do not use that stuff.
I wasn't sure if that lag was... Here's the thing. I wasn't sure if that was a problem with, a camera phone, like you were saying, or if that was an effect that they were using to try and generate some kind of look for the film.
Well, whatever it was, it doesn't work within the context of the film. It really screws things up, and it's aesthetically very displeasing.
Mm-hmm.
So as a filmmaker, when you're editing things, you need to make the decision not to include that. And I'm going to be honest, all the scenes in which it had that kind of camera, they weren't important to the film.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it was honestly about enough interviews and story for about 60 minutes worth of film.
Well, I wonder if the film that's in it is all that they recorded.
Oh, you mean that's it?
Yeah, if they just took everything that they actually recorded and just put it together. I'm just like, that's what we got. Because that's what it seemed like. It's very non sequitur. Things don't make sense.
Yeah.
It's just like thrown together. I hate this film. I don't know how much I can tell you. I hate this film.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Well, let's talk about the music for a little bit.
Well, real quick, I did want to say one other thing while I was on the topic of it. And then this will, you know, transition to the music quite well. When they're showing the actual footage of performances, which are probably the best parts of the film.
Yes.
Showing the actual performance, because those are interesting and you're hearing the music, and that's cool. They were subtitling, but they weren't subtitling the whole song.
Yeah, they would only subtitle a few lines at a time.
What the hell is with this? You're subtitling, like, the first verse, and then they don't subtitle, like, the next two, and then they subtitle, like, one or two more, and then they stop subtitling. And I'm like, okay, make up your mind. Are you going to subtitle this, or are you not going to subtitle this?
I have those albums, and I listen to them fairly regularly. It's not like Eugene always sings in English.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's not like he's actually singing in Romanian or Russian or something like that. He's singing in English, so... Right. I mean, it's heavily accented English, but you can still, for the most part on the CDs, understand what he's singing.
Yeah, so either use the subtitles or do not.
Right.
And if you're going to use them, subtitle at all.
Well, and also it wasn't very consistent with the actual interviews in and of themselves, speaking of subtitling. Mm-hmm. Because some of the... One of the things that I admire about Gorgolbor...
He's hammered already.
It's no, just... I'm not. But I just can't talk. Gogol Bordello.
It's hard to say.
Yeah, it is very hard to say. And it's easier for, I guess, a Romanian to say than an Englishman.
I guess.
But the thing about the band that I really admire is that it takes the intercontinental aspect of punk and it extends it, because you've got a Jewish guy playing in the band. Not just a Jewish guy, but a guy from Israel. Mm-hmm. You've got the two women of Asian descent as as backup singers. You've got a Russian accordion player and a Russian violinist, and then an American drummer. So you've got a very international flair to the band that really feels like it's living up to the aesthetic that they're trying to get to.
Right, and that's really cool. And that's the thing. Like, I remember sitting there watching the documentary and just being like, God, I hate this and it's so terrible. But there's a story here.
Yeah.
The thing is, there is a story that could be told that's interesting, but it's just not done well at all with whoever the person who did it. If someone else had handled it who knows how to handle documentaries, it could have been an awesome documentary, because it is an interesting band. And I will say, transitioning us to the actual music,
yeah,
I had never heard Gogol Bordello before. I had never even heard of them.
Yeah.
You had said you may or may not like it. I like the music. I think it's quite interesting. And when you said in your text message to me that it's gypsy punk, I was like, what is gypsy punk?
Yeah.
And then you hear it in the documentary, and I was like, you would hear this, and someone say gypsy punk, and you're like, yeah. That's exactly what it sounds like.
Yeah.
It matches perfectly. And it's interesting music. The lyrics are cool. I mean, they have actual messages.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that Eugene is someone who is, because of his background and his lifestyle, now Eugene actually lives in Brazil and comes to America to tour with the band. It's still an actual functioning band and everything, but they've been successful enough where he can live in one country and the band can be in another country.
Wow.
And they can get together to tour on a regular basis. I read an interview, because I was trying to track down why he was living in Brazil, if it was some kind of political thing. Apparently he found a girl.
So he
moved there for love and stayed for the country.
So is he totally living by his mantra? Because the mantra is think locally, fuck globally.
Yes he is. Yeah. He pretty much does that, yeah. But, you know, the thing is that they try so hard to make the music unique and interesting. And they try to bring very pertinent messages to it. As immigrants, they have a great perspective on what makes America a great country to be a part of. But then they also talk about, there are songs that are talking about, Mr. Policeman, where's your passport? Where's your identification information? So they're talking about, like, the ostracization that they feel here in this country, even though they came here as either refugees or people who wanted to live here or were born here, and they're trying to make sense of what it means to be an American in a culture that doesn't seem to want them to be Americans.
Right. I thought it was interesting, actually, when Eugene had said in one of the moments where he's kind of being interviewed that he said there were a lot of barricades of bureaucracy in order to move to America,
yeah.
His family.
Yeah, it took them like 6 months to get everything straightened out. And that was only because the only reason it took that quickly... Well, yeah, that quickly, was because of their refugee status. And they were, like, some of the last people to get out of the country that way.
One of the other interesting things is that later on, he's talking to someone that he knows. It's left ambiguous who he's actually talking to. I assume maybe it's someone in the band. And they said that basically they got their naturalization. Like, they're an actual citizen now of the United States.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, well, congratulations, but just remember when you were cool. You know, and you weren't, like, an actual paper citizen.
I think that was, like, either someone who was involved in the... It was an MC that they would bring on stage with them.
Okay.
But I'm not sure if he was an actual member of the band or if he was just working with them. It was implied, but it wasn't stated that his status was actually that of an illegal immigrant. You know?
Right.
You know, yeah. So...
That, he may have just been there, like, on a visa or something.
Yeah, he might have been on an illegal or an expired visa or something like that.
Yeah.
So, the fact that he was able to get a green card was a huge amount of paperwork that guy must have gone through. Right. But he also talks about, like, how New York is a very vibrant and interesting place to live, you know, and how that affects his music and... How he writes his music from a perspective of seeing the world on a daily basis rather than just taking some idea and conceptualizing it. Mm-hmm.
I really think that this film should have focused a little bit more on Eugene's actual backstory. Because it gave you a little bit, but it was just enough to be like, okay, that's kind of interesting.
It's a tease.
And then it stops.
Yeah.
And it's like, let's go to someone else and tell you nothing about who they actually are and just show them talking about the pigeons that come and visit them in their apartment. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think part of the thing with Eugene is that this is not the only documentary made about him.
Really?
Yeah. There's a documentary that was made either like just after this came out or a couple years after it came out where he actually felt like he needed to get back in contact with his Romanian roots.
Huh.
So he actually went to Romania and did like a summer long trek across the country.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's another, I don't know.
That the name sounds of it. Like an yeah. interesting documentary.
Yeah. So there's that documentary that stopped out. Another thing that we should mention about Eugene is that he's actually done acting in a couple different movies. He so, acted in Madonna's directing debut.
Which film did she do?
I can't remember the name of it at the moment.
Very memorable. Huh?
It was very memorable. But he was the lead actor in that. But he also was an actor in a movie starring Elijah Wood.
Nothing.
And I liked that movie. I watched it and I really, really liked it. I didn't know it was him, too. Because.
It wasn't Everything Is Illuminated, is it?
Yes, it was.
No, I haven't even seen it. I just pulled an Elijah Wood out.
Yeah, it was there that. It was the one where he was playing the grandson of Russian Jewish immigrants who goes back to that area. And Eugene is playing a character who lived in Odessa and then took him across the country on a tour. But he shaved off his mustache,
which is a very hair. Important part of his look.
Yeah. His mustache is something that he does the very Romani mustache.
Yeah, it's like a small mustache, and then he uses the wax on the ends and just like rolls it.
Yeah,
cool. I think it looks cool. I think he and the band have a cool aesthetic to them. Like their uniforms that they come up with are very punk and interesting looking and cool.
Yeah.
And some of the things that they do on stage, not necessarily awesome, but enough interest to keep you looking at it. Intriguing, I guess I could say. Yeah. I mean, they are an interesting band. Despite this piece of crap documentary, they are a very interesting band and they have good music with really interesting lyrics. So it kind of make, I don't know, it makes me upset that this documentary wasn't something that could do justice for the actual band.
What did you think about like the film work of them actually traveling? Because there's a lot of scenes of them in buses and in hotel rooms and, you know, stuff like that. To me, that seemed like it was really kind of cramped and confined. And,
yeah.
You know, it kind of brought a claustrophobic side of things. But, I mean, when you think about it, when you're in a band, you're with these people, especially when you're touring.
A lot.
So you have to either work well together or, you know, just put up with people's bull all day long.
Well, and at one point they actually had gotten to, like, a big, like, double-decker bus for touring, which was probably pretty nice. Because before that, it was just, like, one of those vans that you see for like church groups.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like cramming. How many people is like at least 9 people? No, I think at one point it's 12 people into one of those vans. Oh my God. Like how can you move? Like I would feel claustrophobic.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like riding in those vans in general anyway.
Yeah.
You know,
they don't seem safe.
They're not comfortable. That's for sure. But, I mean, one of the things that, you know, that is going on with them is that the band is very honest on camera, which is really interesting. Because one of the girls at one point says, yeah, it really kind of sucks being in a van with, like, eight guys and only one woman. You know, and a lot of them talk about, you know, the struggles of trying to live a life where they're pursuing music as their careers, they're having to like work in musical therapy sessions with people, and they're having to do like bar mitzvahs and stuff like that just to make ends meet while still playing with Gogol Bordello.
Well, that's how it is a lot of the time with upstart bands. I mean, you're doing it in whatever free time you have because you got to make a living away from it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it seemed like the only one who was really making a living at it was Eugene.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot
of... Being the leader, organizer. Yeah. Well, quote, organizer. Well, I don't think he was organizing much. I think he was just...
Letting the drummer do it.
Yeah. That and just kind of walking around and being like, do you want to be in the band? Do you want to be in the band?
Yeah.
And I will say that that aspect of just... randomly grabbing people. Well, it's not random. It was based on their personalities. Yeah. Like, liking people's character and then saying, hey, do you want to be in a band? Because I like you. Seems stupid musically, but is interesting to me from a social standpoint because it's basically saying, you and I are the same. You know, we both have these very good character traits, and I respect you. How about we get together, be in a band, and have our mutually accepting personalities create something amazing.
Yeah.
And it looks like, for the most part, that's worked for him.
Yeah.
Just finding cool, nice, you know, interesting people has created cool, nice, interesting music.
Yeah. Also, though, one of the things that to remember is that the band has a heavy rotation in terms of...
Right.
Like,
So at least finding the music for... A little bit.
Yeah.
And then rotating someone out and getting someone new.
Well, also, they talked about this interesting, like, culture that's developed around the band, at least in this time frame. I don't know if it's still active today, but there was this particular Slovakian bar that every Saturday they get together and they throw, like, a no holds barred, just party. Like, Festivus Maximus.
Yeah, just get wasted, stay there as long as you can drinking, just... Yeah.
There's this one girl who says that she would drink like 6 to 12 bottles of water while she drives down from New Hampshire to be part of this partying. And then when she's going in, she's already, you know, trying to perform a little hair of the dog, you know, to make sure that she'll be good. Because she described it as like a sport. You know, so...
Well, for some people, drinking can be a sport.
Yeah.
Truly. Truly. One of the cool things for me about what the lyrics say of these songs that Gogol Bordello. Yeah. Jesus,
I should have picked like Wilco or yeah. Heart. You know,
so much easier that way. But one of the things that the lyrics that I was getting through the segments of songs in the documentary, mm-hmm. What it made me think of, is they sing a lot about immigration mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So it really made me just start to think about what country borders truly are. And then, really, they're imaginary lines on a piece of paper.
Right.
And hearing these stories of, you know, the barricades of bureaucracy, as Eugene put it, mm-hmm. it's confusing to me, because it's like, why is it this way? Like, what? Like, I understand from a societal standpoint, because I've been living in this society long enough to have been given the information to be like, well, we need to make sure that everyone's cool to be in the country, and they're checked in, and they get a social security number, or whatever number they're going to have, visa, whatever, so that they can be tracked. But when you look at it from the most basic point of we're all humans, we're living on planet Earth, like, yeah. these aren't, like, what are we doing? Like, it's ridiculous. These are imaginary lines. Like, people, the Neanderthals got to just walk wherever they wanted to walk. They went where it seemed best to live.
Yeah, and then they also killed each other.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I think the thing is that society is one of those artificial things that we put in the world to try and make sense of it, because we're afraid of ourselves.
Try and create some sort of order, yeah. as we call it.
Yeah, if things are neatly regimented and we know who is affiliated with what banner, to use a Game of Thrones analogy.
What sigil?
Well, I'm serious, because, I mean, the thing is, I just finished reading a Game of Thrones novel, or Song of Ice and Fire novel, called Clash of Kings, and I just finished watching the third season of the TV show. So one thing that always interested me about that world was how people would identify with different ruling families. And, you know, in a lot of European town, and a lot of European countries, for a long time they did that. All the way up until the 20th century, most of Europe was divided by which family have you chosen to be your rulers. It wasn't anything. Now, there was a geographical aspect to it. I mean, Switzerland is always going to be defined by the Alps. And
be neutral.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, England is always going to be defined by, first off, being an island, and the second off, Hadrian's Wall. Mm-hmm. You know, so there are certain dividing aspects to that. But even within a country, I mean, we live half an hour away from this place called Dundalk. And everybody in Harford County says, don't go to Dundalk. It's a scary place. You know, or even here in where we live, there's a town called Edgewood.
Right.
Nobody wants to go to Edgewood because that's where all the scary people live.
Which isn't actually true. I mean, it's just perception.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's the thing that we do, is that we create the other and the bogeyman out of people who are just across the street from us.
That's true.
So that we can feel better about ourselves and make sure that we are upright and moral citizens according to our own guidelines.
It's become like the fear of everyone that's not you
mm-hmm.
type thing. And I think that's what Eugene has experienced, and a lot of these people that he's pulling into the band with him.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of this music comes from, because obviously a lot of these lyrics support that.
Yeah.
Very interesting, and it really, really did make me think.
And they have this one song that's I can't remember if it's called American Wedding or Romanian Wedding, but it's talking about how American weddings are boring.
Oh, I'll 100% agree with that one.
Yeah.
Anyone who knows me knows that I hate weddings more than anything. It's all about tradition, and we have to do this, and we have to do that. And it's such BS. And I always tell people, I'm just like, do what you want to do, what you think is right for you. Don't be like, oh, I have to do this and I have to do that. Right. But that's what everyone does.
Well, and he's like, well, where's the celebration? Where's the enjoyment and everything like that?
There isn't any.
Yeah, because the wedding, well, except for the one person who has organized the wedding and wants it to be a specific way, nobody else is having a good time for the most part.
You're damn right about that. I never have a good time at weddings. And anyone out there listening who knows me, do not invite me to your wedding if you're going to have one. If you are truly my friend, do not invite me because I hate it. I'll send you a present, though.
It most likely will be beer.
Yes. this Genghis pecan would actually be a very nice wedding gift.
It's a good beer.
It is pretty good. Well, we finished. We're done with the beer. So.
Yeah. But I mean, I think that's one of the important things about Gogo Bordello is that they have taken this aspect of true globalism and a true understanding of who everybody is and saying, hey, look, even though you're Russian and we're Romanian and you're American, we still have a lot in common because we love music. And now in the band, I know that there's an Ethiopian playing bass for them now, and there's a Hispanic gentleman who provides additional percussion in addition to the standard drum set.
Cool.
So the great thing is that the band is willing to take a look at different musical traditions and different things around the world and make it a part of what it's doing. And they do provide a sense of positivity about it. And even though they say that bureaucracy in and of itself is something that's harmful, they do say that people in and of themselves are something to be celebrated.
Agreed. Well, one thing I wanted to ask you about, the band said that they promote neo-optimistic communal movement. What does that mean to you? Neo-optimistic communal movement. So just being like happy and living together, realizing that we're all the same.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I also think it's very similar to what we were talking about with the new sincerity movement with the bronies, in that they are looking for something that brings them together. And, you know, in terms of neo-optimistic, a lot of punk, music in general, but a lot of punk, is very focused on being angry. You know, right. and being driven by a certain amount of anger, and especially like the Clash is known for being angry about British politics,
right?
You know, and everything like that. But I think that the band really wants to celebrate, you know, diversity, a shared love of music, even if it's not a musical tradition that you might be familiar with. It's still something that we can talk about and maybe find similarity over. So I think that's what the neo-optimistic side refers to, is that they're turning away from the anger and the bitterness and you know, the focusing on the negative side of life, and they're trying to focus on the positive side of life.
Like the partying,
the having drinking. A good time, you know, the kippered herring of the traditional Romanian wedding.
And that's how the drummer's left to do all the grunt work, because everyone else is too busy having fun,
yeah. It's a very almost Dionysian way of looking at the world, you know, is saying, oh, let's just have fun, you know, which is great until you realize that stuff actually has to get done.
Yeah, but it has worked for this band, has it not? Because they're thriving, obviously.
Yeah.
They're still around. They have, I don't know, how many albums do they have out?
Like 6 or 7, I believe. They have several independent releases. They just released a new album, which I haven't yet had an opportunity to pick up. But their last album that I have, Transcontinental Hustle, is really good.
Cool.
Like, I listen to that one a lot.
So, it seemed to me in the documentary that a lot of the times they're just playing. Not, like, planning any sort of music out. They're just playing and seeing what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what the albums are comprised of, or are they planning songs out that they recreate then in concert? Because it really seemed to me like they were just, like, doing whatever. Just, like, however it comes out, it comes out. But it was always sounding good.
Yeah. Well, what you were seeing a lot of, especially, there's, like, a lot of scenes in this room that's white that has a lighting rig in it.
Yeah.
That's a studio practice area. So a lot of what they're doing there is actually rehearsing songs that they've already written. One of the interesting things that Eugene mentions in the film is that some of the songs that they do, they wrote like that, like within 10 minutes, they had all the lyrics down. Other songs have taken months to do. But the songs that are always the hits are the ones that they wrote really quickly.
Interesting.
So probably what they were doing, like in that kind of scene, that was their rehearsal space. So they were going over what the song was supposed to, where this particular drum hits were supposed to be, where the accordion was supposed to come in. Now, they don't look like a band that writes down their arrangements. They look very much like they just figure it out and go with it. So probably a lot of trial and error is put into how their songs are put together. So I think what they do is, what they probably do is they write songs and then they rehearse them to a point where they're actually performable. Then they work with the background singers / costumers to get a look together for that particular song, and to plan out like when to beat the drum, the giant drums and everything like that. And then they play the songs in concert until people get to know them, and then they'll record them on the album. So the album is kind of like the last step in the process, which is interesting because for fans who are not in New York City or not a part of their tour, they're not going to hear these songs until they've been rehearsed and played and practiced and polished. So they're just going to hear the song, the end product of the actual album. And it was really cool to see the European fans who got really excited about seeing Gogo Bordeaux.
Yeah, they did. They were like crazy fans.
They were
fans.
Excited that they were in England. They were also probably drunk.
Yep. Well, I mean, goes without saying.
Yes.
That truly is like the concert environment. Mm-hmm. I assume especially for a band like Gogo Bordeaux.
Yeah. Yeah, I have been to my fair share of. I once was at a concert where I had a guy come up to me, and he was about a head and a half shorter than I was, and he came right up to me, and he was standing right against my body, and he just looked up into my eyes, and he said, "Dude, do you have any mushrooms that I can have?"
And I'm like,
no, I'm sorry, buddy, you're going to have to find somebody else. So, I mean, that type of thing happens in concerts.
Oh, yeah. One thing that I thought was odd, bad. I wanted to pose this to you because you know the band a lot better than I do. Are they chauvinistic? Because it kind of seems like it from the beginning of the film. Because, and I'll tell you what I'm referring to. In the beginning, when they're showing them playing live, and Eugene has a woman that he brings up on stage and he wraps her with the microphone cord and then puts the microphone in her mouth and is yelling into it and using her as the microphone stand. It seemed like a very chauvinistic thing. And to start the film that way sets a tone of this band is very sexist.
I don't know. Honestly, I don't. They don't have women actually playing instruments. The women are either dancers or backup vocalists. And I don't really know enough about their relationship in terms of gender equality to really make it stand out. I think that scene struck me as a little weird, and honestly, it went on too long.
Well, and to open the film that way, you are setting the tone as they're sexist.
But remember, another thing that they did in the film was they openly admitted that they would bring women up on stage, take their shoes off, and then hide them because they didn't want them to be wearing like dress shoes or something. And just standing there listening to the music, they wanted them to be dancing and moving around and everything like that. So my first reaction is I don't know and I would like to think that they're not, but there's a portrayal there. And also, like, the girls in the band, they seem to be either, one of them seemed to be like, I'm just here because I'm here. And another one seemed to be like, yeah, I'm here, and I enjoy it, but more I'm here to put the costumes together than anything else.
Yeah, so what, like, what's holding these people in the band? You know what I mean? And actually, are those people still in it?
I don't think they are.
Yeah, well, there you go. Maybe it was just showing them while their loyalty was kind of waning.
Yeah, I don't... The thing is, honestly, that band life is so mercurial. Like, just thinking of the groups that I've been a part of, because you don't know how long you're going to be together and things like that, and then just the exhaustion of performing together is something that can really take a toll on you. So band members typically see you in the most negative light. And also, like, when you're looking at this kind of aspect, especially with the microphone, like the girl holding the microphone in her teeth, I feel like that was something that was probably done as a spur of the moment. Hey, we're drunk and this sounds like a funny idea type of thing. But it doesn't look good on film.
Exactly. And I'm just trying to get at, in the context of the film, being the filmmaker, you have to be aware.
Especially because the filmmaker is a woman.
Well, yeah. And you have to be aware of what you're doing, how you're setting the tone of a film, how you're going to decide to open it up. So, I don't know if this person just... Well, okay, never mind. I'm just going to assume this person has no idea what they're doing, because I watched the entire film, and that's my assessment of it, is this person had no clue what they were doing film-wise.
Right.
So, yeah. I am just going to go with the assumption that it was a poor choice, as was this entire film, pretty much. Just a poor choice.
Like I said, I think there's about 60 minutes worth of actual story here. It could be organized a lot better. And just really put together in a way that's a little bit more entertaining. You know, especially because, like you were talking about the songs, they don't show any of the songs in their entirety.
Right.
All of the songs are cut up into maybe 20-second sound bites at most.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, annoying, because unless you're a fan of the band, which you weren't before this, and I hope the documentary didn't turn you off at the music.
No, not at all.
But you're not going to hear a song off of the movie and go, oh, that's a great song, I want to find out more about it. You're going to be like, well, that was a great 20 seconds of a song, I don't know how to find it now.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Unless you go buy all of their albums and listen to them, you're not going, and then return to the movie. I mean, I think I had a certain amount of appreciation for it because I knew a lot of the songs.
Right.
So I was able to go, oh yeah, I know this song, this is fun. And it's pretty cool to see them in concert, because I enjoy the band, but I've never had an opportunity to see them in concert. I think they're going to be in town soon, but I'm not going to be able to go.
I bet they put on a cool show.
I bet they do.
Yeah.
One of my goals is to see them in concert. So,
well, yeah, I think it's mandatory that you're hammered when you're at the concert. If you truly want to embody,
if you want to embrace the true Gogo Bordello experience and aesthetic,
yes, get hammered.
Yeah, and for that you don't need to be drinking the Genghis Pecan. I mean, any old Natty Bo will do.
Oh, Natty Bo. God, man, Natty Bo's bad. National Bohemian, for anyone who doesn't know what Natty Bo means.
It's the
local awful beer.
The local Baltimore beer of choice, so.
Not even local, though.
It's not. It's like, what, in North Carolina? Georgia, something like that?
I believe it's brewed in Georgia and Wisconsin.
Yes, yeah. So,
exactly. But 95% of the sales are in Maryland, so.
Yeah.
They've got people properly fooled.
Properly indoctrinated.
So, this is where I should say to people, think locally, fuck globally.
Think locally, drink globally.
Yeah. Actually, didn't they say that that's how it was originally?
It was originally reversed, yeah.
Yeah. Their mantra.
Yeah. And then he essentially he wears it like on a hat, I think. and it got reversed at one point, so he just kept it.
Yeah. Just like, well, whatever. Yeah. And that's the thing. Eugene, as a person, is really just like a just-do-it type person. Just like very spur of the moment. Just like, I'm gonna do this, let's do this, all good, let's, just living for the moment.
Well, and also that's kind of the artistic personality, though, is that you're a very mercurial person who will just do whatever, whenever, with whomever.
Whatever emotion strikes you at that moment is going to drive your actions.
So that can be a positive thing in terms of creativity, but it can lead to a lot of destructive self-choices, personal choices.
Yes, that's very true. Well, I think we've kind of exhausted this.
Yeah, I think we have.
I think we did quite well for what I was expecting us to be able to get done with this. I didn't take nearly as many notes as I usually do.
I didn't take any notes, but I hardly ever do.
But that's because I was trying to, like...
You were trying to find anything.
I was trying not to commit suicide while watching the film. Like, that's kind of... That's, if you couldn't tell, I don't like it. So, do you want me to take the lead on evaluating this film? Okay. If people can't tell, I hated this film. It was garbage. It was a total pile of crap. That doesn't mean that I don't have respect for the band. I do. I have a lot of respect for the band. Where they come from, I think, is interesting. How they've been put together is interesting. There is a story there, and the music is good. And the live shows look interesting, to say the least. So there was a story there. Somewhere there is a story there, but somebody else needed to put this together. The way this was carried out, the audio is bad, the video is bad, the camera work is awful, the cutting was some of the worst editing I've seen, it was poorly directed, just everything's poor. It's bad, terrible film, interesting band, half star.
I think that's the lowest rating you've given anything.
Yes, and this beer is much better than watching the movie.
Just out of curiosity, what would you give the beer?
On our typical Brutal Battle scale, out of 10 points, it was good enough. I give it a 3 out of 10. But as our name says, Brutal Battle, we're very brutal on the ratings. So a 3 is actually close to normal.
Yeah.
That's pretty much average.
I was thinking it was a 5, but I'm much more forgiving on my beer ratings.
Yeah.
So in terms of the movie, as a fan of the band, I enjoyed it because this was my first opportunity to really see the band making music together.
Well, behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes, and also learning a little bit about their personality.
And I would recommend it to people who already love the band, because then you get to see some of their personal life.
Right. I don't think that the movie did a great job of portraying everybody in a positive light. And I also think that it kind of portrayed the band as a bit of a cult of personality around Eugene.
Yeah.
Which is not to say that he should change who he is, but he maybe should look for people who are stronger personality to be in the band. One way or another, just to putting that out there. I did think that, like I said, it was fun to see the music. I don't think I feel the need to watch it again. Once is enough. I would much rather see that second documentary that I mentioned of Eugene going across Romania. If I can remember to look up the title, we'll include that in the show notes. I'm going to say 2 stars.
Can you do the math for me on that one?
So half a star and 2 stars, that's 2.5 stars divided by 2, 2.5 divided by 2, it's 1.25.
1.25 star.
Yeah.
Overall.
If I'm doing my math correctly. Thank you, Genghis Pecan.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. You're definitely right on that. Yeah. So for the podcast, 1.25 star for this. I do not recommend it to anyone unless you are an avid Go Goal Bordello fan. Or you just don't want to listen to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, every time that there's a bad camera cut, take a drink.
Yeah, there you go. Or any time that there's a subtitle missing when it should be there, or the video looks awful, or the audio sounds
or any time a band member is completely trashed.
Yeah. There are a lot of drinking games you could put to this film, so, yeah. Maybe that's the way to enjoy it.
It must be, because the nonstop for you was a definitely nonstop agony.
Yeah, yeah, it truly was. It felt like the film was nonstop. It would never stop.
All right, well, they all can't be winners here on Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night.
But a lot of them have been.
A lot of them have been, which is amazing.
So you're going to get these stinkers from time to time.
But almost, the stinkers are almost more fun to talk about.
Yeah, I agree. I would say one of my favorite episodes was The Hunger Games, just because I got to rip it up. And I don't know, it was just fun. I got to try and be a little funny.
Yeah.
So it was a good time.
All right, well, that's enough from us. I hope you have a good day.
You've been listening to Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night.
Our theme music was provided by Sweet Wave Audio. To find more royalty-free music for your own projects, check out sweetwaveaudio.co.uk.
And special thanks to Ariana Ramos for her graphic design savvy helping us with our album art.
Visit our website at mostexcellentmovienight.com to listen to other episodes, give us your opinion, and share with us other movies you'd like to have reviewed.
You can also contact us through our email address, mostexcellentmovienight@gmail.com. We would love to read them on the air.
Also, if you could rate and review the podcast on iTunes, we would be your friends for life.
For sure. That's all for now. Thanks for listening to Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night,
where movies are most excellent. This has been a Nerd Circle podcast production.